Hello, everyone, and welcome to the next episode of The Classical Scene through Radio St. Pete. I'm Victor Halls, and my guest today is Anjan Shah, and that amazing music that we just heard, perhaps you recognized as the good old tune Caravan, is something that he and his Temporal Tal Collective are going to be performing this September 18th in St. Pete at the Palladium Theater. So it's a real honor to have him with us today. Anjan is a multifaceted musician and marketer who bridges cultural traditions and genres, creating music that resonates with emotion, story, and a universal appeal. I think that's a wonderful introduction, and I am so happy to welcome you on here.
Thanks, Victor. It's such a pleasure to be here, and I'm really looking forward to this conversation. Talking about our upcoming performance at the Palladium. Yes, that was Caravan by Juan Tizol. We created that arrangement as part of what we do and how we kind of envision blending Hindustani with jazz and classical. In the case of Caravan, we took somewhat of a standard jazz tune, and we introduced some Hindustani elements that you heard at the end there. One of the techniques that is very common in Hindustani music is a technique called the tihai. And what that basically is a rhythmic phrase that's repeated three times. If your listeners know a Western compositional technique called the hemiola, it has the same type of effect. It creates a sense of anticipation. It creates a sense of forward momentum. And it resolves on the big beat one when everything lines up. And so, you know, we enjoy taking jazz standards such as that, or jazz compositions such as Caravan, and putting them through this type of filter to make something new and unique, perhaps a refresh of an old idea, but looking through more of a global lens.
That's a fascinating description. Would you tell us more about what Hindustani means? Because it's an amazing thing how you're blending so many different traditions, both Western and jazz and Hindustani.
Sure. Within the Indian culture, there's primarily two schools of musical style playing, and it's somewhat regional based. Hindustani comes primarily from the north. And Carnatic comes from the south. Both of the styles of music are based on tals, which is rhythm, and ragas, which is melody. And if you listen to either Hindustani and or Carnatic music, there's some very similar things that are occurring compositionally. Most all of them have the idea of improvisation central to the core. Rhythm, unlike Western music, where harmony and melody drive compositional aspirations, in Hindustani music, it's all about the rhythm. Melody comes second. If you listen to Hindustani or Carnatic music, you'll notice always at the foundation, there's some sort of drone that's happening throughout. And that allows the melody instrument, whether it's a sitar, a bansuri, a violin, a singer, the ability to work on developing an improvisation in that moment based on what they may be information that they may be getting from the rhythm player. In this case, for us, it's a tabla that we use, a very common rhythm instrument in both Hindustani as well as Carnatic music. And so that you know, the improviser is essentially kind of reacting to that. Some of the other differences, Carnatic music is, some would argue, much more regimented. Hindustani looks at more of a romantic view, so they put more emphasis on the melody that's kind of occurring. Ornamentation is a big element for improvisers in both styles of music. And some of the rags that are performed, there's a several thousands of different rags that are performed at different times of the day based on the season, based on astrological signs, as I mentioned, time of day as well. I'm not sure if I answered your question fully, but Hindustani, in a nutshell, comes from the north. Carnatic, in a nutshell, comes from the south.
Yes, and I love the sound of the tabla in this track. It sort of instantly transports me to a different world where I may know that tune Caravan, but it's a little the there are different spices involved. And you were explaining to me how also the timing you played with, you chose to just truncate the ends of the bar a little bit. Ba da do da da dee da da. So it sort of falls forward in this groovy way that so interesting. I love
Yeah,
that.
one of the things, because Indian music is so much based on rhythm, in a lot of Middle Eastern music. I mean, you see this through Turkey, throughout the Middle East, Greek music, as well as, as we're talking about Hindustani music, is they've moved away, or they started, I mean, Hindustani music is thousands of years old, and they focus on sevens, fives, nines, 11s, and 13 beats per measure, and those groupings can be very different.
Yes, that's something that is really not found that commonly in Western music. In some classical music by, let's say, Stravinsky, he liked to play with time changes and things like that, but it's much more common for some of these other cultural traditions.
Yeah, and I think that's a great call out. As we're talking about blending styles, we're looking at some foundational things that really set apart Hindustani music, but can move very easily into Western or jazz, especially jazz. And when we start thinking about jazz, it's interesting. If we look back at 1959, a very pivotal year in jazz that was going on in America, Dave Brubeck had just released his album that had Take Five on it,
Of course, love
and
Take Five.
a classic 5/4 tune. But also on that album was Blue Rondo a la Turk.
That's right.
And that composition came about as a result of a State Department tour. He was one of the a part of the Jazz Ambassadors program that took jazz musicians, put them on tour all over the world. He happened to be in Turkey, and he heard street musicians playing in the time 2 + 2 + 2 + 3,
That's right.
and Blue Rondo a la Turk is using that time structure, and he created a tune. It's a little bit of a nod to Mozart's Rondo alla Turca, but it as back as far as 1959 goes. This idea of taking Eastern ideas and introducing it into Western music, specifically jazz. Jazz, 1959 was a pretty significant year in the development of jazz. Not only did you have Brubeck, who started to introduce different time structures in jazz, which would then go on to impact jazz musicians, but also impact pop musicians like the group Rush. The group Radiohead.
I was just thinking of Radiohead. 15 Step is also in five, and
And so
cool.
all of those groups kind of trace their lineage back. And, I've read interviews of the drummers and the musicians of those groups who look back at what Dave Brubeck was doing and his drummer, Joe Morelli, in setting up those what we call in Western music asymmetrical time structures. And so we take a lot of those uneven time structures, in Western music, 4-4, 2-4, 6-8, or 3-4. We take in Hindustani music, we take that core element and then try to overlay that on, in this case, a caravan. But then we also look at other jazz tunes that, may be interesting to kind of put through that type of filter.
Interesting. Yeah, that's so nice to hear you describe all these things. And I love to hear more about you and your multidisciplinary background. You're a multi-instrumentalist yourself, right?
I play saxophone and bansuri flute, which you'll hear on the 18th. There are several selections on the program where I'm playing a couple of different types of flutes.
Nice. Is the bansuri typically a bamboo flute?
It is
Okay.
a bamboo flute, and it's a diatonic instrument, unlike Western instruments or Western wind instruments. They tend to be chromatic. They
That's
have
right.
keys, right? So bansuri flute players usually will carry around a big box full of a bunch of different flutes, based on key signatures that they may be playing in, And so I'm excited about the fact that we're going to be playing a couple of different songs, and I'm going to be able to play a couple of different flutes, which have different timbres that have different ranges and, to a certain degree, different emotional impact to them.
Cool. Will you also be playing the saxophone for us?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. Majority of the work will be done on saxophone. Saxophone's my main instrument. And, I got involved in music, grew up in Detroit and got involved in music with the saxophone. And so it's kind of like my first introduction to Western music. But, when I was growing up, there was very few Indian families in the Detroit area where I grew up. And, we didn't have a lot of Indian music to listen to outside of the house. My parents listened to recordings they had at that time, and I'm sure I'm dating myself here, 8-track tapes. And if you're
Oh, eight
in
tracks, the way of the future. Okay.
8-track tapes and cassette tapes, as well as LPs, long play records.
I definitely still appreciate listening to a good LP. Definitely.
So and then much more recently, I just started to kind of rediscover my Indian heritage through learning how to play bansuri.
Cool, because you had played for 5 years in the Army Field Band, right? Hundreds of concerts and touring around Europe, and that's so interesting.
For 5 years. I played in the Army Field Band out of Washington, D.C., and our job was just to tour around the country. So in that 5 years, I played over 670 concerts, toured all over the U.S., through Europe, Canada, and parts of South America. And so that was a great experience, playing for audiences all over, essentially all over the world, getting to speak to folks and just really learning how music kind of connects us all. It's such a powerful medium, it's interesting how it crosses traditions, it crosses cultures, and it has the ability, like I said earlier, just to really connect us all. Yeah, so that was a great experience being able to tour, and I think through that experience, I learned a lot about marketing. My professional career, I've had kind of a parallel career as a corporate marketer. Several years ago, I went back and got an MBA, and I was fortunate right out of business school to become head of marketing for IKEA's North American digital division several years ago. And so got some great experience there, working in a corporate environment, learning all about marketing and how to connect with people. Using art messaging, sonic communication, just to create an emotional connection to the brand. I think I've been able to carry a lot of that over into what we do as the musicians of the Temporal Talk Collective, to try to communicate stories behind the music, especially in this day and age where people are so consumed with wanting to know more. I mean, if you look at the proliferation of streaming TV and all the different types of production houses out there, Amazon Studios, Apple Studios, Hulu, HBO, all of the Netflix, all of these companies are investing heavily on creating stories and being able to put that through film in many cases. And oftentimes, many of those films need music to heighten the emotional experience with that. And so it's a great, there's some great synergies between being a marketer and being a musician. And, I'm fortunate enough that I can kind of practice both.
That's excellent. I wish that all musicians had experience like this because our job is to find ways to bring music to people, bring people to our music, and understanding what really interests people and what gives them the best experience is incredibly important. And that's why I'm grateful to do this podcast and talk with fascinating persons such as yourself. So just to remind those listening, this is the Classical Scene. I'm Victor Hulls, and I have Anjan Shah here with me. And so let's get back to talking about your upcoming concert. First of all, what are all of the instruments that we'll get to hear in the Temporal Tao Collective on September 18th?
Oh, so this is really exciting. So yeah, as I mentioned earlier, I'm playing tenor saxophone and a couple of different bunsuri flutes. We have a tabla player. His name is Naveen, a fantastic player from Denver. And so he's kind of at the heart of the rhythm section. Amy Shook on upright bass, acoustic bass, an instrument that you normally associate with not only with orchestras, but then also in the acoustic jazz realm. And then Jonathan Epley on guitar. So that makes up the quartet. And then we also, one of the interesting things about our group is so much of Hindustani music, as well as Carnatic music, they were originally designed for devotional music to accompany, devotional services. Often at the center point of some of those devotional services was a dancer. And in this case, Sarah Morelli is our Kathak dancer. Kathak is a very specific style of classical Indian dance. It's 1,000+ years old. So there's a great deal of legacy, a great lineage. And Sarah has studied in India for about 20 years. She's a professor at at Denver University out in Colorado, and is an ethnomusicologist by training, but is also this amazing Kathak dancer. And so with each one of the dances, there's usually a story that goes along with that dance. And so she'll be talking a little bit about that. She's also a fantastic vocalist. And so one of the songs that you'll be hearing is a lullaby, actually, that was composed by Michael Dana. And he won a Golden Globe for his score back in 2005 for the score for Life of Pi, if your listeners remember that movie. Anyways, there's a lullaby and they're beautiful Tamil lullaby, and Tamil is another geographic region of India. And so she actually sings it in Tamil, which is fantastic. And so, you know, your listeners will hear some familiar instruments, the bass, the guitar, saxophone, as well as combined with bansuri flute, tabla, and some different types of singing.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, that's going to be so interesting. And with the elements of dance and that she's also a singer, what talented, beautiful people you have here. And it's interesting that you are all from kind of around the States, right? You're up in Chicago, and a lot of your other musicians are in Denver. So you do a combination of virtual and in-person work together to create these projects, right? And then bring it down here.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean it's you know, in this day and age with technology, you know, we can't necessarily have real-time rehearsal just yet, but the latency aspect of online meetings every year seems to get less and less latency, which could make potentially online rehearsals that much easier over time. But oftentimes what we do is we get together by Zoom and we'll talk through a piece of music that we're all somewhat interested in wanting to explore to kind of put it through this lens. And it's a very collaborative effort that we go through. And then once we feel like we've got enough structure, you know, the rhythmic element, the melodic element, what we'll do is we'll plan on getting together over a weekend, you know, whether that's in Baltimore. Amy and Jonathan are in Baltimore. I'm in Chicago. As you mentioned, Naveen and Sarah are out of Denver,
Cool.
and get together and, you know, just rehearse for a couple of days straight to get it to the point where, you know what, there's something solid here. Let's incorporate it and work it into our repertoire. So that's kind of how we've been working. And, you know, this all came out of the seed or the kernel that started all of this is about 2 years ago. I commissioned a composer to write about a 23-minute rhapsody that combines Hindustani, jazz, and classical for this group. And at that time, we weren't necessarily a group, but we started getting this group or this instrumentation and orchestra. And as a result of that, a couple of performances, we realized that, you know, there's something really unique with this that isn't currently available in the marketplace, as well as artistically, none of us are doing individually. And so we realized, you know, Jonathan and Amy, you know, Amy is a very prolific jazz bassist, plays with the big band Diva, has her own groups. Jonathan plays in the Army Field Band, is a jazz guitarist with that group and tours. Naveen plays with different very classical Hindustani groups. But we've never done individually done stuff like this on a consistent ensemble approach versus just a one-off project, if that makes sense.
Yes, it's a big difference when you actually consider yourselves a group, a group of people who trust each other and have many more things to look forward to. And it's interesting to hear about your creative process. That's very cool. And now there is a local person in St. Pete who we have to thank for a large part about bringing you guys down here to share this with us. That is, of course, Ella Friedrichsen. And she was the longtime principal librarian for the Florida Orchestra. It was a big job. Got to prepare the sheet music for all those classical musicians who need it. You know, we're not improvising most of the time, right? But Ella is a very fascinated and interesting kind of person who wants to also push the boundaries with music a little. So tell us about your relationship and how she's been influenced.
Ella has been one of our biggest fans, and she's become one of my heroes. She has just been relentless on advocating for us. She just recently, about a year or so ago, won a creative grant from the Palladium to produce a concert that shows, her sensibility, her vision for art, for music. And we crossed paths through a mutual friend, and as she started to learn about what more and more what I was doing, she was very kind and generous and said, "You know what? I've got this grant money to produce a concert, and I would like to have you guys participate in that." And so she has been fantastic, working tirelessly behind the scenes to pull all the different pieces that are involved together. I'm really looking forward to spending time with her. But like I said, none of this, we would not be, literally, we would not be talking today if it wasn't for her and her passion and drive for wanting to introduce different ideas, different approaches to music, to the St. Petersburg and surrounding areas.
Oh, beautifully said. Yes, I really appreciate her as well. And it's a wonderful institution that we have in downtown St. Pete, the Palladium Theater, because they have this creativity grant and many interesting things happen there. That's great. Perhaps we could listen to a little bit more of the music, get a little tease of something that we'll get to hear that day.
Sure. I think the next thing that we could take a listen to is composition by Anushka Shankar, titled Chasing Shadows. And your listeners may know Anushka from her father, her very famous father, Ravi Shankar, sitarist as well, as well as her sister, half sister, Nora Jones. Anyway, she's a very prolific sitar virtuoso playing all over the world. She wrote a piece, I want to say back in 2011, called Chasing Shadows. And it takes it's a very Hindustani composition. And what we've done is taken the major elements of that composition and added elements of jazz into it. And your listeners, when they hear it at the performance, they'll hear quite a bit of jazz improvisation in there versus kind of like Hindustani type of improvisation. But I think the excerpt that we're going to listen to here employs a very common technique in Hindustani music. It's a call and response technique, not unlike what we hear in gospel music or in blues, but it's called shawal jawab. And that technique is a way, essentially, in jazz nomenclature or jazz language, we call that trading fours or trading twos. What you'll hear here in this excerpt is after kind of the solos, and you'll hear trading going on between the guitar and the saxophone.
Cool. All right. Well, let's listen to some of this. Very cool.
Yeah, so that's an exciting piece, and it ends. You heard that interplay between the saxophone and guitar, and it ends with a traditional T-high, which is pretty exciting. So we're looking forward to performing that, for all of your listeners. Come out to the show, and hang around afterwards. We'd love to meet you. We're looking forward to connecting with folks in St. Petersburg.
Oh, that's great. Are there any other elements of the concert that you'd like to share with us? Different compositions or anything to get people even more interested? I'm sure we've got people wanting to come already.
I think there's going to be some familiar songs or compositions that your listeners will hear. We talked a little bit about Dave Brubeck, and so we're going to actually do a version of Blue Rondo a la Turk, based on how we perform it. And a lot of the other pieces have been written specifically by members of the organization, by the ensemble. Jonathan Epley wrote this. He's very much a rock influenced guitarist, and so he wrote this really powerful rock type of tune, but it takes on a very different flavor without the full drum set and electric bass, and as opposed to acoustic bass, which Amy plays. And rather than screaming guitars, it's saxophones playing the melody. And so it's a really unique filter that we're putting that through. Amy has written a couple of pieces that you're going to hear. A piece called Seven Kisses, and it's in the memory of one of her dear friends who passed. And then we've got two selections that will feature Sarah, and there's great stories that she tells. She's such a gifted storyteller. I think your listeners who come to the performance will really appreciate the type of imagery that she creates with the narrative that she talks about, and then the dancing that goes on with that reinforces or helps to illustrate that narrative. And so it's going to be a very unusual concert. We like to tell stories in between the pieces. I think it's what makes us unique, as opposed to going to, say, a chamber concert or an orchestra concert where the ensemble starts and just kind of plays through, and then the audience members are kind of left to their own devices to read the program notes to figure out what is going on. We're very much of the mindset that we want to help curate the listening, and we want to be there to help them understand why these pieces are important to us, and hopefully that we can connect. They can find those little nuggets of inspiration that inspired us, hopefully see that within themselves as they listen to the music.
What a wonderful sentiment. Yeah, I'm really fascinated by all of this and cannot wait for it. So again, that's September 18th. It's a Thursday night at 7:30 p.m., right? At the Palladium Theater, and you can find out how to get tickets by visiting that website. And I'm so thankful to have you here for discussion, Anjan. You're such a fascinating person. It's been really wonderful to learn about you and your life, bringing various musics together and to share with the people.
Well, I so appreciate the opportunity, Victor. It's been such a pleasure talking to you, and really appreciate the fact that you're willing to open up your listeners and allow us to kind of share our experiences as musicians, as storytellers. And so thank you for the opportunity.
That's right. Yes, you're the first very much non-classical kind of person to join us. But again, you bring everything together in such interesting ways. So, how about on our way out, we just listen to that groovy tune Caravan one more time to hear
Awesome.
the cool spin that you guys put on it.
Yeah, awesome. Hey, thanks. We'll see you next Thursday.
All right. Thank you, Anjan. And thank you all for listening to this episode of The Classical Scene. I'm Victor Halls, and can't wait to see you soon and make lots of music in St. Pete.